Great. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Wednesday, February 24th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And thanks, everyone in the audience, for your patience. We do have a quorum now. We have one bill to take up today, and so I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1573. We have guest committee administrator Beth Riley from the Committee of Origin to tell us about this bill.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 1573, for the record, has a no revenue and a fiscal statement issued on the bill. The base bill requires the city to annex territory without a vote upon receipt of a petition for the annexation submitted by all owners of land in the territory, provided that the territory is included within the urban growth boundary of the city or metro, as well as additional qualifications. The -7 amendment that's in your packets on our OLIS replaces the measure and authorizes a legislative body to declare that a territory is annexed by ordinance once the city determines that certain criteria have been met. It also deletes legislative acknowledgement of urban reserves.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And we have several people signed up to testify, so I'll begin by calling a panel of three. And we'll start with John Chandler, David Honeycutt, and Sean Gillians, if the three of you would like to come forward. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And whoever wants to start off, go right ahead.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here on behalf or in support of Senate Bill 1573 and actually 1573 with the -7 amendments. The -7 amendments to the bill are essentially a gut and stuff. We take the provisions of the bill that are in Section 2 of the draft bill and eliminate the remaining sections and modify Section 2. The issue that this bill addresses is voter annexation, voter-approved annexation. There are approximately 30 to 35 cities in Oregon that have voter annexation, and the issue arises when land is brought inside the urban growth boundary. So we're talking about land that's already inside the boundary. As those of us who deal with land use understand, bringing land inside the urban growth boundary is a very difficult and contentious process. It takes years and requires many public hearings, all kinds of public input, decisions made by the city council with acknowledgement then by LCDC, work back and forth between the agency and the city, and then the possibility of an appeal of that determination to the Oregon Court of Appeals and the Oregon Supreme Court. So it's a very contentious process. We've designed it that way under our land use system on purpose, and that's fine. Once that decision is made and the land is brought inside the urban growth boundary under our state's land use system, it is then deemed urban land. The goal of our land use system is to develop inside the urban growth boundary and leave the land outside the urban growth boundary for rural uses, predominantly agriculture and forestry. So once the land use fight happens and the determination is made that the land is brought inside the urban growth boundary and all the appeals and everything are done and we have a final city decision that typically they've spent many hundreds of thousands of dollars on getting, that land that's inside the boundary is then deemed urban in nature. The problem that we have in the 30 cities that have voter annexation requirements is that once the land is inside the boundary, sometimes it's outside the city limits. So the city hasn't annexed that land yet. So you have land that's inside the urban growth boundary that's deemed urban under our land use system, but outside of the city limits of the city. When that situation occurs, in order for the land to be, in order for services to be provided by the city to that property, the cities typically require that the land be annexed. So we need to annex the property in order for the in order to receive sewer and water so that we can develop, which the land use system says that we're supposed to do because the land is now inside the urban growth boundary and urban in nature. When that occurs, what this in the cities that have voter annexation requirements, it throws a huge monkey wrench in the ability of of those properties to develop, because immediately prior, in order under in those cities, in order for that land to annex into the city, it first has to go to the voters for a thumbs up or a thumbs down. So what really is an infrastructure issue, a technical infrastructure issue, becomes a thumbs up or a thumbs down vote. There are a number of cities in Oregon. In fact, we have property owners whose land has been inside the urban growth boundary for nearly 15 years. Land was brought in with the idea that it would develop, but they can't develop the property because every time they get on, they go to every time they go to annex the city into the city, and the city council says yes, you can annex. Then it goes to the vote, and the voters turn it down. So what this bill is designed to do is to say, when you have a property owner or property owners who are inside the urban growth boundary but outside the city limits, they wish to annex in 100%. We're not trying to force somebody that doesn't want to annex into the city to annex. If 100% of the people want to annex in, they're contiguous to the city, and the city council says you've met all of our requirements, then you can annex in without sending it to a vote of the public. Essentially, this makes sure that the process in every city is uniform, and would carry out the intent of the land use planning system. Without this bill, you have land that's inside the boundary that's supposed to be urbanized that can't urbanize, and as a result, it puts pressure on Metro and the cities to expand their boundaries to make up for the land that can't develop. So this is a common sense bill, carries out the intent of the land use system, and is long overdue, and we thank Senator Beyer for bringing this bill on our behalf. It's a great bill and really needed to make sure that the land use planning system works.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. I apologize for the way I sound. If it serves sympathy for my cause, I don't apologize. Story of my life, Senator Boquist. A bit of context for this bill, the issue of annexation voting and, from our standpoint, the pernicious effects that's had in Oregon has been a problem almost since the land use system was started in 1974. The first court cases sprang up in the late 70s involving cities down the valley. And you've seen some testimony on OLIS that this is overturning court cases. That is exactly what this bill does. It overturns a series of court cases that found in the sort of logic that only fools lawyers a distinction between the land use action of annexing, which is governed by the city codes and such, and the political act of voting on annexing. I think those court cases were wrongly decided personally, and I think this bill helps further the Oregon land use system. But by acting on this bill, you will be solving a problem that only afflicts 30-some-odd Oregon cities, but creates a lot of havoc within those cities. I'd like to spend a little time talking about what this bill doesn't do, again, responding to some of the testimony that's in OLIS. It does not, and this is really important because many of you and many of your colleagues represent districts and cities where this is going to be an issue, it does not affect what are sometimes called hostage or island or cherry stem annexations, situations where there's land checkerboard pattern of city and county land within a jurisdiction. People who do not want to be annexed are not affected by this. So those situations are left untouched. This only applies to land under the specifications of that Mr. Honeycutt gave you, where 100% of the landowners want to. Nobody is being forced to do anything under this bill. Same thing applies to the cities. As earlier drafts of this bill, it was never our intent, I think, I'm not sure it's an accurate reading, but we have amended with the dash sevens to make it clear that the city standards for annexation, whatever they have on their books now, public hearing or no public hearing, whatever the standards are in terms of infrastructure and density and whatnot, those have to be followed. So this doesn't force the city to annex property that they don't want to annex. It simply says the property owners can start the process. City then makes sure the annexation proposal meets their code and standards. Only thing it says is you can't, the whole city doesn't vote on that proposal once that process is over, but the city councils still remain complete control over the annexation process. It does not affect farmland. Land inside of urban growth boundaries by operation of Oregon law is not farmland. It may be land being farmed, because in some of these urban growth boundaries, particularly the ones where they can't annex without a vote of the people, that's the only economic viable use left for those property owners, is to farm the land, but it's no longer farmland within any legal definition. It is future urban land. This bill, the issue of farmland or not, was answered with the urban growth boundary. Once it's inside the UGB, it's considered by state law to be available for development. This bill actually furthers that objective. And finally, this bill does not violate Oregon's land use law. I believe it furthers Oregon's land use law. When we have a 20-year land supply on the books that cannot be actually used because of the lack of water and sewer, which cannot be obtained because of annexation, then the land use system simply doesn't work. You end up with a land shortage. If you don't have 20 years worth of land, then you have, by definition, less than 20 years worth of land. As demand increases, property gets built, prices go up. We've already got a number of other bills dealing with the issue of affordable housing. And while annexation is not a even a significant cause of housing price increases, it is not, that is part of the problem, where you can't add land, you can't develop land, you can't bring the water and sewer, can't bring the roads, can't build on it. If you have constant demand, you have a housing shortage. We believe this is a very good bill. We appreciate very much this committee's consideration of it. Senator Beyer, as Mr. Honeycutt said, we appreciate him bringing it forward, and I commend it to you. Be glad to take any questions.
Thank you. I think we'll hear from all three of you and then open it up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Jillians, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors, also in support of Senate Bill 1573 and the -7 amendments. My colleagues have done a good job summarizing the bill. From the real estate perspective, we really do view this as sort of a cost driver and what's making housing more and more unaffordable in a number of communities throughout the state. As they alluded to, when you have land that's supposed to be urbanized that can't because of a simple vote of the people, then you have sort of a shortage of available spots to build on, and you don't have move-up buyers and the additional things that come with new construction. So I've bored a number of committees, not yours yet, with my tales of Sherwood, so you'll get a quick little synopsis on that. I live in Sherwood that does have voter-approved annexation. We have had a parcel of land that's been in the urban growth boundary since 2002 to the south of Sherwood. It's tried to come in three different times. One started as a more robust plan of 400 acres. The very last one was down to 70 acres. It's been defeated each and every time there under the fears that a Walmart is going to develop there. Just for the record, we already have a Walmart in Sherwood. I assure you they're not building a second one in a town of 18,000 people. But that's sort of the hysteria that you get around the annexation process. And we're at the point now where literally families will come door to door with letters to our house saying, we would like to move to Sherwood. Would you be interested in selling your house? That's the sort of impacts that voter-approved annexation has on a smaller community like that town. With that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions you all might have.
Okay. Thank you all three for your testimony. Do we have any questions? Okay. I don't see any questions for you.
Thank you again.
And we'll call our next three witnesses, and those are Richard Reed, Peggy Lynch, and Aaron Doyle, if the three of you would like to come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'm Richard Reed. I'm co-chair of Oregon Communities for a Voice in Annexations. Last minute, I'm really not sure. I'm hearing things just now that are the old arguments against voting on annexations. I'm sure you've probably heard them, too. A little background about us is that, yes, for 26 years, Oregon Communities for a Voice in Annexations has been helping Oregonians understand the importance of voting on annexations. And during those years, the right to vote has been confirmed in the Oregon courts. During those years, Oregon Communities for a Voice in Annexations has successfully defended voter annexation in the legislature. And by doing so, we have helped clarify and legislate thorny issues about annexation, such as island annexations and majority voting. Today, over 600,000 citizens in 32 Oregon communities have claimed the right to vote, and in nearly all cases, they have enshrined that right in their city charters. And yet, here we are again at the legislature, not only defending citizen voting rights, but also city autonomy and sound planning. Consider for a moment, we're talking about the crisis, the housing crisis, and the claim that there's not enough land on the market. There are other more pertinent factors that are affecting the availability of housing. Consider for a moment the anti-tax measures of 5, 47, and 50. Consider what those are doing to tax revenues normally devoted to city services that are the very foundation of the real estate market. Declining revenues means less funds available for real estate development and a lot of other things that make Oregon community life special. But Senate Bill 1573 is likely to stimulate real estate speculation and force cities to annex land they won't need or can't afford. A small number of businessmen in the real estate industry is already getting growth stimulants from governments, handouts. I call them profit protectors, like tax breaks and discounted infrastructure costs. They also get what I call landowner privileges, like putting city planning decisions on a fast track ahead of other city business. Commissioner spots on local planning commissions are often reserved to those who make a living from real estate. In spite of these protections and these privileges, the vocal minority of this group want more. They want more even if it elevates their rights above the rights and responsibilities of Oregon cities and Oregon citizens. Enough. This is an affront to a democracy. Both our right to be heard, as we are today, and our right to decide the fate of our communities across the state would be quashed by this bill. There's no question about what would happen if Senate Bill 1573 passes. All you do have to do is recall Oregon before citizens worked with the legislature and we all stepped up to the higher ground of land use planning. Recall the wanton disregard of both property rights and municipal finance. Recall speculative real estate development and the community malinvestment it stimulates. By denying our right to vote, Senate Bill 1573 takes us back to those days. It would terminate legitimately earned right of over 600,000 Oregonians in 32 cities across the state. Recall what Oregon was like before we, the people, confirmed our First Amendment right to assemble and speak. And we put that in our land use planning goal number one, citizen participation. Senate Bill 1573 seeks a return to those days before that. Make no mistake, citizens in democracies have an inalienable right to participate in all decisions affecting our common interest in the land and our communities. But Senate Bill 1573 denies that right here, where more than 500,000 Oregonians who care about good productive land, historic land, recreational land for hunting and fishing, habitat for rare and unusual bird flora and fauna. Folks who care about those things, especially the beautiful land known throughout the world, they would not be able to protect that land if this voting right is taken away. Okay, I would like to just speak directly to the bill, if I may, and just some things I noticed. Obviously, they've already admittedly a gut and stuff. I'd like to say, for example, in Section 1, it says the section applies to city where laws require a petition proposing annexation of territory. You know what it says. Make no mistake, this bill is an intent, pure and simple, to stop voting wherever it occurs in the state. Also down there in Section 2A, it says the territory included within an urban growth boundary. I think some of you already know that LCDC has finished streamlining the urban growth expansion process. The city is now, it's clear path for cities to evaluate and amend the UGBs when it's warranted. So I'm saying let's just set aside Senate Bill 1573 and see how this new process works. What I'm hearing is already working well. The city's not having any problem bringing UGB land into their control. Section 3 there on the back refers to territory to be annexed under this section includes any additional territory. You'll notice it's any additional territory of any size. That could create some unintended consequences. Further on, it says suggests the land would be at a density equal to the average residential density within the annexing city. Instead of the average residential density, it should be maximum residential density. So you have a true test of what the growth is going to be. Section 4, last sentence, an ordinance that contains a description of the territory annexed. That's all it would require, but there'd be nothing about a development proposal or the costs or impacts of what the land would be used for. Finally, in Section 3, it declares an emergency. Folks, there's no emergency. I mean, you know as well as I do that there isn't. The clause throws up roadblocks to those who will want to petition and reclaim the right to vote if this bill passes and for future, now and future Oregonians. Okay, thank you. I'm through. If you have any questions.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. We have numerous positions around citizen participation and access. We support city and county home rule and have always advocated that citizens have the right to bring matters before their local constituents on a variety of issues. We have also supported the statewide land use planning system with local implementation. So we reject the bill before you. We believe that Senate Bill 1573, although we can agree with much of what the first panel said about the land use system, what they didn't say was that what happens in a voter annexation is a conversation, a broad citywide conversation on how to pay for the infrastructure and the public services, such as police and fire, should the property become part of the city. Not all cities have systems development charges, or other methods to require that the annexed property pay for the cost of those newly required services. So that's another of the issues and another of the reasons that we believe that should local jurisdictions and local citizens bring this before their cities, that they should have the right to maintain voter annexation. It does not account for the feasibility to serve because all cities have, because it does not require that the properties come into the cities. It does require that they come in at the whim of developers or property owners. The current system assumes that local governments and their citizens have local control to determine their destiny. And to go to the Dash 7s, originally I had a whole number of other things to say about the fact that there would be no public hearing. I understand that the Dash 7s would at least allow for a public hearing, even though it does not allow for a vote of the people under the current system. And I do take exception to the idea of that there would other properties could be annexed in order to get the services to this newly annexed property. It doesn't say how many acres that would be. Lastly, the issue on page 2, line 6, at a density equal to the average residential density, having worked on House Bill 2254 rules, we are focusing on increasing densities in urban growth boundaries, and this would not do that. It would actually allow it to stay the same. So there are a number of other reasons, but in 1976, the city of Corvallis was the first to create the opportunity for voter annexation, and the League continues to support that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Erin Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. While the League represents all 242 cities on issues of statewide interest, we also step in when we believe legislation has the potential to disrupt our home rule authority. And for that reason here, we have to oppose Senate Bill 1573 as well. We are aware of 35 cities, including such cities as Oregon City, Corvallis, Rogue River, McMinnville, and Salem, have a requirement within their charters to have a vote on some or all annexations. This bill would inherently interrupt that charter requirement. We recognize that there is a difficulty when we add a public vote to an annexation decision, and we have been tracking those votes to see how successful or unsuccessful annexation votes have been. And our data from 2008 to 2013 shows that there are 152 votes on annexation that were held across the state, and only 20 annexations failed in that five-year period. Even in the city that has had the most failed annexation votes, it still had a passing record of annexation votes overall. This is indicative that the citizens that demanded this form of governance are not opposed to all annexation, but wish to control the size and shape of their city's developments. In addition, we've talked about the land use system. The one thing the land use system does not allow for is for a city to determine that it chooses to have no growth in the next 20 years. Oftentimes, the argument is made that these voting requirements are placed when cities don't want to see growth. The land use system requires a 20-year urban growth boundary, which is expected to have development over 20 years. But we were never asked if we would like to have a zero or a five-year or smaller UGB than that 20-year need. If we added that option and allowed the citizens to have that discussion, perhaps the voting on annexation wouldn't be necessary at all. In addition, we believe that our charters are like our constitutions. They are the way that assigns how a city is governed. We do not enjoy the ability of having our elected officials not to be the final arbiter of development within our cities, but they are beholden to those charter requirements and the governance rules that the citizens have placed within that charter. There is a way to remove the requirement for voting on annexation, and that is through a vote of the people who placed that provision in the charter to begin with. That's exactly what happened in Scappoose last year. The city council said, we have found that this requirement doesn't add to the conversation, and we would like you, the citizens, to remove this provision from the charter. They made their case to the people, and the people agreed, and that charter provision was struck in 2015. We believe this is the way that city charters should properly be amended, and it should not be done by the state legislature. While we appreciate that the Dash 7 provides more clarity as to which cities are impacted and narrows it to a very specific set of situations and is very clear on its face, I will make one quick note that was brought to my attention just, and it's more of a Scrivener issue, and probably this is more establishing legislative intent than anything. It states in Section 2 that the city with laws, we have charters, we have ordinances, and we have laws and our charters and ordinances, we don't have laws. That's just a minor technical thing that I wanted to get onto the record so that it's out there that that is what is intended in the Section 2 language. I'm sure that Ledge Council would agree that that's what they intended. I appreciate the time you're taking to hear this issue, and I'm happy to answer any questions and provide any data about which cities or what the votes have looked like in those cities.
Okay, well, thank you all three for your testimony. Did we have any questions for this panel? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again. And next we will call Randy Tucker and Roger Martin, if the two of you would like to come forward. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Tucker. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager of Metro. And I just want to testify very briefly today. We support the Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 1573. We don't support the underlying original bill. We support the Dash 7 amendments. And for reasons that have been, I think, described by the first panel that testified today. Metro, as you know, is charged with managing the urban growth boundary of the Portland metropolitan region. We are charged, as was described earlier, like cities are outside of the metro area, with providing a 20-year supply of land for urbanization. When the land is brought into our urban growth boundary, it should be generally on the path toward urbanization, requiring a public vote on annexations for land that's intended for urbanization has caused problems for years in our region in terms of being able to facilitate orderly urbanization of the land that has been designated for urban development. This solution that's before you today Obviously, is controversial, but it's better than other solutions that have been proposed in the legislature over the years, including one a few years ago that would have mandated that local governments provide services to landowners outside their jurisdictions. And so we are supportive of this bill today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions or try to.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent the Borland Neighborhood Association. I want to speak to the part of the bill that Randy doesn't like, the original bill. The bottom section is a request by the Borland Neighborhood Association to be heard, and I guess it really gets down to, do landowners and the property taxpayers they are have any rights in this whole process? Our group has been petitioning to be included in the urban growth boundary for 20 years. 10 years ago, almost, another Senate committee held up a metro bill for several days when Senator Alan Bates questioned the fact that our people weren't being heard. And Metro came down with their executive director and promised that something was going to happen. Well, 8 years later, nothing's happened, and we're still in limbo. The Borland area is about 500 acres that is immediately south of I-205 and north of the Tualatin River. It's got the largest traffic circle in the state of Oregon, I think. It has two very large schools. Of the 500 acres, about half of that is possible development. We would like to be in a position to plan for that development. We realize nothing is going to happen until I-205 is widened through to Oregon City. All of us recognize the traffic problems that are created by the ball up on I-205. We would like the opportunity to know that we can start the planning process, which even Metro agrees eventually this is going to be developed into some kind of a property. Not an industrial area, but property very much like the west end of Lake Oswego, the Cruise Way area, which I have a lot of familiarity with because 40-some years ago as a legislator, I was able to get that started by cooperation with the Oregon Department of Transportation, extending 217 through the Cruise Way, which eventually led to the development. We would like to have consideration. I've been told by most people in the room that you can't do that in this bill, but I appreciate the fact that Senator Beyer included us in this originally, and the -3 amendments to this bill would allow that to be done. The reason we want it, the main reason, is that we have had several nationally recognized developers come to us and say, when you're ready to go, we want to develop a plan that we can present to Clackamas County and to the whichever city, probably the city of Lake Oswego, that ends up with jurisdiction. They're not going to do that as long as we're still in a reserve or a limbo area. We need a definition of when this will be started, and I would appreciate very much if the committee would consider the -3 amendments. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you both. Did we have any questions for these witnesses? Okay. Thank you again. And next, I will call Jim Ludwig and David Barenberg, if the two of you would like to come forward.
Yes, Madam Chair, my name is Jim Ludwig. Am I too close to the mic?
The mics are really sensitive, but I think you just did a good
distance. I'll back up a little bit.
Yeah, that's great.
Once again, Jim Ludwig. I live at 7500 Southwest Leibold Road in McMinnville. Before I talk about Senate Bill 1573, I'd just like to talk a minute about this one-hour rule. At about, 1 o'clock, I got a phone call. I was going out the door to go further cut up some cordwood, and there's this hearing. So I sped down here, and as I told Madam Chairman, probably sped to get here. And as I'm driving here, I'm thinking, how many people aren't going to be able to show up with 1 hour notice and compete against lobbyists who walk these hallways every day of the week and who have access to you all the time? It's wrong. This 1 hour rule is counter citizen involvement. just like this bill is. This bill would deny citizens the right to vote on annexations into their communities. I sat in on the formal session in the Senate Business and Transportation Committee in which John Chandler said, people keep saying no. Well, obviously, it's not a policy of people keep saying no. As you've heard, over 80% of the annexations are voted in on their first attempt. This bill goes against citizen participation. I hear all the time out of this building how you want to increase voters, how you want to have people involved in the process. This is the antithesis of that. This would deny citizens a chance to vote. And I'll give you a little background on my situation. I live west of McMinnville. 20 years ago, 1996, a developer wanted to develop a tract of land west of McMinnville, largest tract in McMinnville City's history. I met with a developer and said, would you consider bringing it in segments, allow the city to build up their infrastructure? He said, no, he wants to bring it in total. We went to the city council and determined we had no chance with them. So we did what Oregonians do. We filed an initiative, went out and collected signatures, collected the right amount, put it up for the vote of citizens. They overwhelmingly voted to require their approval for annexation into the city. We went back to the developer before his partial came up for a vote and said, would you reconsider? Bring it in segments. We won't oppose it. No, he wanted it in total. So when it came up for a vote, it was resoundingly defeated. We went back to the developer again and said, listen, we don't want to stop you. We know this is going to be brought into the city, but please bring it in segments. He said no. Went up for a vote again, and it was voted down again. In the succeeding 20 years, about half of the development has been put in. Every time the segments are up for annexation, they're approved. This didn't stop him from going forward. Voting on annexation increases citizen involvement in the process. It requires the developer and the city council to look and see if they have the infrastructure necessary to handle that development. This bill is even worse in another aspect. It's got an emergency clause in it. Of course, there's no emergency clause spelled out in the bill because there is no emergency. Not only does this deny citizens the right to vote on annexation, it prevents citizens from filing a referendum to put it up for a vote to see if they want to vote. This is counter to everything I hear that comes out of this building, and you should vote no. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Mr. Ludwig before we move on? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. We're glad you were able to be here today. And please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. I'm David Barenberg, and I represent the city of West Lynn. The Borland provision that was recently addressed has had a unifying factor hasn't been usual in some of the business in the metro region. That provision has unified, as you heard, Metro, Clackamas County, the cities of West Lynn, Lake Oswego, and Tualatin in opposition to inclusion of that provision in the bill. We believe that there are, from the West Lynn perspective, clearly it's contrary to longstanding opposition of the three local cities, and that there are real practical transportation and other resource issues that make this a particularly difficult area to include at this time. As Mr. Martin testified, there are major transportation issues through West Lynn. The main street in West Lynn was not affectionately, but is referred to as the third lane of I-205. Transportation backs up as it is. So we
clearly would support the elimination of that provision of the bill. City of Westland also has a charter amendment that allows for local votes on annexation. To the recollection of anybody in the city, a vote has never, an annexation has never failed. And with that, I would just like to end my testimony and take any questions the committee may have.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, I don't see any. Thank you both. And finally, we have one more witness, John Van Landingham, if you'd like to come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Van Landingham. I work as a lawyer for Lane County Legal Aid in Eugene. I've spent 35 years as an advocate for affordable housing in Eugene and in Springfield and in Lane County. 25 years doing the same in this building. I also spent a lot of time on land use planning. I served for 12 years on Eugene's Planning Commission, the same time that Senator Beyer served on the Springfield Planning Commission. I then served 12 years on the Land Conservation and Development Commission, the state's planning commission, and I have to thank Senator Beyer for helping me get confirmed to that position. I served the last 7 years of that as chair until November of 2012. So, as a very strong supporter of affordable housing and of land use planning, I am a strong supporter of this bill. I'm not a developer. I'm not a realtor. I, too, had to drive fast to get here from Eugene this morning, or this afternoon, because I was working in my office. You need to understand that in 1973, when Senate Bill 100 was passed in this body to create the land use program, home builders ended up supporting it. They knew they were going to get managed growth, but they also thought they were going to get certainty. Certainty that if they did a development as a city, laid out the requirements, they would be able to do it. Voter annexation defeats certainty. In my view, and in the view of many other land use lawyers — I'm not a land use lawyer, but I did land use policy for 24 years — voter annexation is inconsistent with Oregon's land use planning program. I don't understand how anyone can support both. Why is that? Oregon's land use planning program requires cities to plan for growth. They have to have an urban growth boundary. They have to plan for development within that urban growth boundary. They can't expand their urban growth boundaries until and unless they develop the land inside their urban growth boundary efficiently and effectively. Voter annexation is not part of the state's land use planning program. It was not adopted by LCDC, which sets the goals and sets the rules to implement those goals. It is separate from the state land use planning program. Voter annexation affects land already inside the urban growth boundary. It can't be developed until it's annexed, but it's land that has already been planned for growth and approved for growth by the locally elected officials. That process is a very lengthy and citizen-invested process. I mean, mostly what you probably hear from developers is it's too long. It's too much citizen involvement. But that's what it's about, is citizen involvement. It is goal one. And so you spend years asking the citizens, should we expand our urban growth boundary? If so, where should we expand our urban growth boundary? What should we put there? What should the density levels be? And then what you have with voter annexation is voters overriding that. Again, I don't believe you can support both of these. They're inconsistent. Practically, the result of voter annexation, even though it doesn't stop that many, is for those that it does stop, to dumb them down at lower density levels. Because what they're saying, what the opponents are saying, is we don't want development at that level. Even though the city and the elected officials have already approved it, they're saying we don't want it. The example given to you about the segments, developing in segments instead of in sort of a large block — that's a large block that apparently the city of McMinnville had already approved for development. Developing in segments greatly increases the cost to extend services to that whole block and to plan for the development of the whole block, because you don't know whether you're going to get approved for the whole block instead of in segments. Ultimately, a city that defeats an annexation for land inside the urban growth boundary with a vote will end up having to expand its urban growth boundary sooner, because its land will not be developed at the level that the city planned for. If they plan to develop it at this density and it gets developed at a lower density, then that means when they meet their need, they're going to have to expand their urban growth boundary sooner and take in more land. That's not the Oregon Land Use Planning Program concept. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Burdick.
Mr. Van Lennekamp, I was a member of LCDC for 7 years, and I just want to thank you for your testimony. And I think it might sound very similar to the testimony that I gave many years ago when I was opposing the whole notion of voter-approved annexations for that reason. So you were very articulate, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. That completes our sign-up sheet. Is there anyone else here who didn't get a chance to testify, who wants to testify on Senate Bill 1573? Okay, then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1573 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1573. And Senator Beyer.
Comment?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I wanted to make sure, even though my name is on this bill, this is not my bill. I've had a lot of people say it was. As my philosophy in Oregon is that as a legislator, if someone comes to me and says, I have an idea I would like to have put before the legislature, I will have that drafted for them, and it's up to them to convince people or not. This is a pretty good example. It started out, I think it has two provisions in it now. It started out with four, but people chose to have those taken out before it got there. So that's where it's at. Having said that, to the contents of the bill, I happen to think that this is, as Mr. Van Landingham said, is in the right direction. I, too, have been involved in land use matters as a planning commissioner at a local level for about 25 years as well. And I think this, the voter-approved annexations, is inconsistent with the land use laws that the state has. I do believe, you know, I think the comments from the League of Cities, I do think we should change some of our laws. I think a city should be able to decide whether it wants to have slower growth, smaller growth, or not. I mean, I really think that's a local community choice. But the place to do that is in the land use planning process. I have no problem with cities having a charter provision that allows them to vote on the comprehensive plan. That seems appropriate to me. But it seems that once you have done the plan and it's been acknowledged by the state, then the owners of property that have been affected by citizens' decisions have a right to be able to make a legal determination within their thing. They're still subject to the requirements. Some of the comments about whether the planning or the infrastructure and stuff is there, you have to understand first that in most cities in this state, all of the infrastructure that's required to be put in is required to be put in by a developer, not by the general taxpayers. Plus, they're required in most cities to pay a systems development charge, which compensates other citizens for infrastructure of a general nature that was paid for before or that's going to have to be required in the future. So those arguments really, if the city council is doing their job, should have been taken care of. You notice that in the bill, if you look at the sections that talk about, it has to be, any development has to be done in conformance with the approved and acknowledged comprehensive plan. That's something that there's should have been done by all of the citizens, and it has to conform with any requirements. There's no restriction on those requirements. Most cities have requirements on phasing of developments. They have requirements on density. They have all of the most of that stuff, and certainly they have freedom under the Act to do as much as they need to do that. So cities have a lot of control, and the way citizens control that is by choosing their local elected officials. This is just kind of an after the fact, and it's contrary to our democratic system of governance. We have a representative form of government, not general democracies, and that's the way it's designed. So I think this is in keeping with our land use program that's heralded by most. It allows for controlled growth, or no growth at all. And it seems like a reasonable thing to do. Last point was I did have significant concerns about whether this was consistent with the Constitution in terms of local control, and I've explored that with legislative counsel. And if opinion of counsel, I'm not an attorney, is that it is consistent with the Constitution. That is a matter of statewide concern. So
Okay. Thank you for your comments. And we are in a work session. Senator Farioli, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 1573.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved the Dash 7 amendment to Senate Bill 1573. Is there discussion on the amendment? Is there objection? Okay. Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Senator Farioli.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move Senate Bills 1573 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 1573 as amended by the Dash 7s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair, I know who the carrier should be.
Any other discussion? Okay. Any objection to the motion?
If I vote no, do I not have to carry it?
No. Motion carries, and we will ask Senator Beyer, even though it is not his bill, to carry the bill on the floor. And I think that completes our agenda for today. So with nothing, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1573, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.
And we are adjourned.
Thank you.